What's up, guys? Welcome to episode number 2 of the 25 Feet High podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the pre-season and early season scouting and hunting methods for killing South Alabama, Panhandle Park of Florida, whitetail. Things that we have found that work out for us, things that we've seen, and things that we get out there and scout ourselves. So I got Zach joining, co-host Zach with me today. Of course, I'm Cade, and we're about to get started with this thing. But first, we would like to take a second and thank our supporters of the podcast. First off is Alabama Archery Academy. Alabama Archery Academy is your South Alabama Hoyt and Matthews dealer, also providing archery lessons from beginner to national championship levels. Check them out on Facebook at Alabama Archery Academy. Black Eagle Arrows. Black Eagle Arrows provides superior arrow technology from the tournament trail to the hunting woods. Black Eagle Arrow has you. I'm shooting the deep impacts, and as of right now, Zach is also shooting the deep impacts. Loving them. They're shooting great. Threads Custom Bowstrings, family owned and operated, providing the fastest turnaround time in the industry with your pre-stretched bowstrings. If you are in the market for a new set of strings, call Threads Custom Bowstrings. Tell them 25 High sent you. And last but not least is Native Sense. Native Sense is your truly Alabama owned and farmed deer urine scent company. 100% natural, collected for hunters. Native Sense. We get results. All right, guys. Well, now that this is done, we're about to roll on into this podcast, and we're gonna kind of let Zach take the lead on this one. But we are ready to get this thing rolling.
Dear Lord, I'm so grateful for the Lord allowing me to harvest this beautiful bird.
I got a freaking giant bass,
25 feet high, baby. This is awesome.
All right, guys, so we're about to hop right into this thing, and just so if y'all hear any, like, heavy breathing or anything through the mic, we just want to apologize for that. That is not Kay. That is Lucille, my bulldog, and she's laying at her feet right now, and she tends to grunt quite a bit, so just... We just apologize for that, but she couldn't stand not sitting in here with us. So, we're going to first start off with just our idea of, now she's rubbing up against me because I said her name. But we're going to first start this thing off by talking about how, since our last podcast kind of covered this mainly, we're going to talk briefly about how we use our corn on private land for us, our preseason thing. Where do you put it? Why do you put it there? And what do you expect when you put it there? I mean, obviously you expect to see deer, but what do you expect or how do you expect to end up using it?
Yeah, so basically on my lease, what I've been doing is going to high travel areas other than like food plots or somewhere where we have a shooting house or something like that. I've been going back in the woods, finding fresh deer sign and figuring out kind of areas that they're already deer and putting corn there to kind of change the way they're doing.
Try to change their natural travel route slightly.
Not really. Kind of, yeah, but just get them to one area, basically, every now and then.
Yeah, to get them to come by and check your corn.
Yeah.
I use mine in the same sense. I have some feeders right now that are running in a food plot, but I also have some smaller feeders that I have hanging in the woods and more natural travel routes. Like one I have hunting in, but my club is predominantly planted pines. It gets burned every couple years. That has hardwood bottoms. So deer are naturally lazy creatures. So they're not going to force themselves through something a lot of the times. So like if I ever get to where there's two small thickets that are running toward each other, and then there's a open spot in between them, that's typically where I would hunt, even if with or without corn, if I'm hunting in the woods. I put a feeder up in one of those particular areas a couple weeks ago, and I got a couple young bucks and a few does that traveled through there and found the corn. And basically what the corn's doing is just delaying their natural travel. They're walking in, they find the corn, they stay and eat a little bit, and then they continue on their natural travel route. So it's a little bit less pressured for them. And my sense of my idea is that deer is going to be more pressured or less pressured because it is in a natural route that it was taking before. And I just put like a little bus stop in there for them to get a quick snack.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing. Although as we mentioned in the last podcast, you know, I have a lot different terrain. There's a lot of, it's just really thick out there. It never gets burned. So you really get to, or one thing that I look for really is man-made trails, such as a bush hog trail, fire lanes on property lines or something. And off of that, I'll look for deer trails that come in or intersect with that, and as well as if I find like a well-used deer trail, I try to find an open spot in the thick woods that it widens up enough where I can get up a tree or something and hunt that area.
I got you. Yeah, that's pretty much how I would do it as far as if I'm hunting more in my bigger hard oak bottoms, kind of how I work them when I'm going into those. We have a couple oak flats at my club, but not many. Last time you went with me, we went to that one spot and put a camera out that was kind of a somewhat oak flat that was right before you got to an edge of a bottom.
And yeah, that's one thing. Another thing about my club is there's a lot more hardwoods than on Cade's land.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, we have oaks, but like my main source of or where I choose to hunt, we do have those oaks for, you know, acorns and stuff like that. But like I look a lot of the time, we have a few natural persimmon trees that are in our club, and so they're persimmon trees. Is like deer candy.
Yes, it is.
So I love finding and hunting over those. I killed my 6-point in full velvet last year under a persimmon tree.
But yeah, persimmon trees are a very primary food source down here in the South. I don't really hunt them as much because on my lease, most of the persimmons are in the middle of a food plot. And the majority of the time with as many coons as we have, a lot of the persimmons are gone off of the tree before they get ripe, and usually when they get ripe is right around that first week of deer season, a bow season.
Yeah, when I say I try to hunt the persimmon trees, it's typically I have that first week of hunting season, and after that first week of hunting season, the persimmons are gonna be gone, more than likely. So. I try to get all of my hunting done if I have any deer on camera in that area early on the persimmons. But it worked out great last year where I killed a buck in velvet that he was coming. Like he was literally hanging out in that food plot all day long, just waiting for the wind to hopefully blow one of those persimmons out of the tree after he picked all the ones he could reach.
Waiting for that arrow to go through his lungs.
Yeah, he did get it pretty good there. But that was an awesome hunt, being able to kill that deer. So if you hadn't seen that, check it out on 25 Feet High Outdoors YouTube channel.
It really is a really good well-made video, I think. And it was
It was our very first hunting video we've ever posted.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, I killed my deer like a couple days before.
I killed that buck Sunday morning, and I think you killed yours
Wednesday afternoon.
Was it Wednesday afternoon or yes. Saturday afternoon?
It was the Wednesday afternoon before that.
Yeah.
So the season opened up on like a Monday or Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. It opened up on a Monday because this year it opens up on Tuesday, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I think the 15th is on a Tuesday. So, yeah, you killed yours early. And the way it worked out with editing, I just got done with my video before we got done with Zach's. That was when we split editing duties equally, and now it's pretty much me, I guess.
I have a job in school. And
I have a job, too. I run a business.
But yeah, another thing that I look for on, at least on my land, is oak trees. Like, obviously, everybody who knows anything about hunting deer knows that deer love acorns.
They will walk over corn to get to acorns.
Yes. And a lot of the times, like, on my lease, the oak trees will be in bottoms. That's where the majority of the hardwoods are around here, in the bottoms, primarily because the higher ground gets cut every 30, 40 years, isn't it, something like that?
It depends on
what they need.
It depends on what type of pines they planted.
Yeah.
At your club. I'm not a forester, so I don't remember all the different types of pine trees, but ours is the faster growing pines.
Well, that's what the majority of it is the loblollies and slash pines. But yeah,
they thinned ours about 5 to 8 years ago, somewhere in that time. And the majority of our pines are, 20-25 year old pines. Like, yeah, they're around my age, maybe a little bit older than me.
Yeah, but one thing that I've noticed, now, I haven't spent a whole lot of time in those oak bottoms, but at least in my little bit of experience of trying to really get out and hunt harder than just sitting in a shooting house or something, I've noticed that deer are more prone to walking around an oak flat that is on a little bit higher ground.
Yeah.
If you can find oaks, like, that really comes into play more on public land for me, because, like I said, most of my oaks are in those bottoms. But I know deer move around in bottoms. I just don't see them as often in the daytime. But I see a lot more daytime activity on higher elevation oak flats.
Yeah, I mean, deer like being in the upper levels. Like, I don't. They'll walk, and like at my club, I've noticed they will walk through the bottoms, but they're not going to stay in those bottoms very long unless there is a significant food source there, like from acorns and stuff like that.
Which that could also be as far as not using the bottoms as a primary food source often. That could be just because most of the oaks, at least around here, most of the oaks that are in the bottoms are red oaks, which are more acidic and aren't as palatable as the white oaks, which are typically on higher ground away from the bottoms.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought about that. That's probably part of it, at least.
Probably so. And, I mean, I think it's that, and it's the part that deer just don't like being in lower levels. I mean, just naturally you hear people talking about pretty much any type of land to where it's hilly or stuff like that, that those deer are predominantly going to walk the edges of those higher banks, whether it be
ridge lines and those bluffs.
Ridge lines and bluffs and stuff like that. And I can't remember whose podcast it was. Was it Southern Ground that he was taught that? It may have been him, actually, or one of the guests that's talking about those deers mainly walk up three-quarters of the way up bluffs.
It was one of the local legends on Southern Ground. I don't remember exactly which one, but a guy who hunts, I think it's either Bankhead or Barber, somewhere around there, in closer to like central Alabama, where there's more terrain than there is here. He noticed that the deer typically walk 2/3 up or 2/3 down a ridge.
Yeah, that way that makes sense. Just thinking about it, and that I guess they walk on a true ridge, which we don't really have that many true ridges. The Kaneka has some,
a few,
yeah, but not like in my club is predominantly flat.
Yeah.
With just those bottoms running through it. But my deer would literally walk straight through the bottom and run up. But the vast majority of the time, they walk around the edges of those bottoms at about that 3/4 of the way up type distance, or
two-thirds?
Two-thirds, yeah, about that 2/3 from the top distance, somewhere in there. And that way, I understand that means they can see everything down below them, but they're still up high enough to where they can make it to the top if need be to see or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't ever get to really hunt over much acorns and stuff like that, or oaks or whatever, because just I don't have that many. I have some white oaks, and but they're mostly younger trees.
Yeah,
like younger trees, like producing the past 7 or 8 years young.
One thing that I've thought about, which I haven't spent enough time in the woods to like actually paying attention to this, but if you know anything about like fruit trees, what you want on fruit trees is the new growth every year. That's why plum trees and blueberries and whatnot, people who have them trim them down every year, because that new growth produces a bigger berry or fruit, and it's usually a little bit sweeter, tastes better, you know. So I've thought about whether or not younger oak trees, whether or not they produce a better quality acorn for the deer. Just whether it's taste or actual nutrients or what, I don't know. I've thought about it, and I've kind of sort of a little bit noticed that the younger oaks typically have more deer sign under them, but I haven't paid enough attention to it to really say, but that's something I've thought about at least.
Yeah. I don't know. That'd be worth a Google.
Yeah.
Be worth a good, but
or just a couple years in the woods.
Yeah, I think one thing is it gives that that younger growth is lower, and a lot of the times deer use those acorn trees, whether it be a licking branch, or you know, or a they can reach some of those young leaves that's coming off of it and stuff like that. So It may be more to it than just the acorn itself, you know.
And another thing is, while we're on the topic of oaks, I've heard that, you know, like I just said, red oaks, the acorns are less palatable to the deer since they're more acidic. But those, what some people have witnessed is that deer will use, or that one of their primary food sources is the red oak browse, like little saplings. They'll eat the leaves off of red oak saplings and not pay as much attention to the acorns. And then they'll eat the white oak acorns and not pay as much attention to the white oak saplings.
Yeah.
Like that's a good browse for them.
Yeah. The good thing about talking about honey or finding and hunting under acorn trees or oak trees, I'm sorry, guys. I'm so used to saying acorn trees. That's what everybody calls them, or most people call them around here. But the good thing about talking about finding them and learning how to hunt over that food source is that they are found no matter if you hunt public or private land. You just have, if you hunt more of a public land, you just have to get out there and spend more time finding these spots
the spots that the deer are actually hitting. Because I've seen, there's one spot in particular I know of that it's like the most beautiful oak grove you'd ever imagine 50 yards off the road. But there's hardly any deer there because it's 50 yards off the road.
Yeah. But sometimes if I've learned anything from listening to a few of Southern Grounds podcasts, I forgot his name, but he had one of the local legend series that he does, that it was an older gentleman that was talking with him, and it said that you either need to get further than anybody else or be crazy enough to hunt closer than anybody else.
Yeah. And that's like that deer I killed on public land was, I mean, it was 100 yards off of a road that, granted, nobody uses that road except for us, but it's 50 yards or 100 yards off the road where I killed that deer.
Yeah, because I heard it was a story. They had camera footage of or photos of a bigger buck that was like 50 yards off of a parking lot.
Yeah.
On the public land, yeah.
And he was talking about climbing up and killing a deer, and then a truck driving by, and he could tell what the tag numbers were on that truck.
Yeah. So you got to either be tough enough to go further than anybody else, or crazy enough to hunt right off the road, or the legal limit off the road, whatever that may be.
Pretty much.
It's 100 yards with a rifle. I think you can get away with 50 with a bow or something.
I think
like
it's
that.
Something along those lines.
But we don't know that for sure, so double check that law before you do it.
I think the biggest thing for as far as that is finding where the deer are eating. Because there could be one thing, you know, talking about that is, I hunted this one spot last year. I only got to hunt it twice, but it's a pretty good-sized chunk of public land that you can't, I mean, it's like a mile and a half walk back to the very back end of it, and there's no roads closer than the highway. And I was thinking, well, I'm going to walk as far as I can back in here and then climb a tree. Ended up walking, I don't know, 400 or 500 yards up, and I got up my tree an hour before dark. Well, I got up my tree, and then an hour before dark, I noticed, or I heard a deer blowing about 50 yards from the truck. And 50 yards from the truck was a row of white oaks on a high elevation. It may have been only 50 or 75 yards off of the highway, but there were deer there. On my walk back, I also spooked a deer in that same oak grove right off the highway.
Yeah, that deer was blowing at your truck.
Yes, it
was. Didn't have any idea what was going on. But, like, even translating that to private land, I mean, a few years back now, I was bow hunting at my club, and there was a doe I killed a doe that was literally, I climbed about 10 yards off of one of the main roads in our club where people drive down all the time. I just saw where two bigger heads were coming together, and there was this little thinner spot in between. And it was, I literally walked in there and climbed 10 yards off of one of our roads. Now, that is one of our busier roads in our club. I mean, through the main strip. And I was sitting in there, and about 10 minutes before sunset, about 10 or 15 minutes before sunset started, that deer walked through that little spot that I picked out. It's like, hey, something might walk through here. I literally had nowhere else to go. Didn't have any good deer on cameras before I started running so many cameras. And that doe walked through that little spot and walked right up underneath me. I shot that doe at like 4 yards from the tree that I was climbed on. And that deer, my arrow blew right through her. And the deer literally ran and died in the middle of my road.
It's an easy track job.
And I it was easy, everything. It worked out perfect.
Backed the truck right up to
it. I pulled her off to the side of the road, drove my truck down, parked it, and threw her in the back and was able to leave. But that worked out perfect. So hunting closer can lead to easier haul out jobs.
That's a fact.
But you gotta be lucky enough or do enough research to find where if the deer are actually in that spot. But you have to find that food source or that commonly traveled area.
Yeah.
If you're no matter where you're at, if you are hunting and every time you drive to your wherever you're hunting, if you see deer crossing the road right there, almost every time you drive by it, don't be scared to park down the road and walk in and hunt where you see them crossing all the time. As long as it's legal. Yeah, as long as it's part of the land that you can hunt. You know, that there. I don't know, even just get the legal distance off the road or a little bit further off the road than the legal distance and hunt them. Because they're going to travel that area, and there's a good chance they never get hunted right there. Like they just, the main thing they worry about at that point is getting hit by a car.
And on a lot of the roads that I drive up to the spots on public I hunt on my lease, they don't really have to worry about getting hit by a car.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime you're in the Connecticut, like, I mean, we've hunted out there weeks upon weeks of turkey season. And hadn't ran into a single person, and then run into 10 people in one day.
Yeah.
Just all matter what day, whether or not people think it's going to be a good day. But
before we get more into, or another thing that I wanted to mention that I am planning on doing this year is I want to get better at identifying bedding areas because I've never really put much emphasis on figuring out what that is and where deer typically bed. So I'm just going to spend time in the woods and try to figure that out, because one of the biggest, I mean, you hear it all the time on the hunting shows. Well, I don't know about hunting shows, but the hunting shows that I watch.
YouTube hunting shows.
The hunting public, listening to podcasts like Southern Ground and all of that.
The not Hollywood hunters.
Yeah. You hear it all the time, hunt between food and bedding.
Yeah.
And I think I just need to get better at identifying where a deer's likely to bed and then going in seeing if it really is a bed. And, you know, I feel like that could help me out a lot in being more successful.
Yeah. And guys, when I say not Hollywood hunters, I'm not referring to everybody that's on mainstream TV. I'm just referring to a few shows.
You know, if you watch hunting shows, you know the Hollywood hunters.
Yeah, you know who the Hollywood hunters are. They make a good living being Hollywood hunters.
I wish I could make that.
Yeah, but you know who the Hollywood hunters are. But, all right, so going from, you know, finding food source, that's a pretty self-explanatory thing. You just got to put plenty of time on the grounds, find areas that they're actually using and stuff like that, you know, because if you found a oak flat 2 years ago, it doesn't mean it's going to produce this year. You have to be able to adapt because trees change every year. They'll produce fantastic 1 year, not hardly produce the next. So going from that, Zach, is there anything new this year that you are going to particularly implement in your strategy, whether it be equipment or anything to do with hunting that you think is going to give you a better chance to harvest more deer this year or bigger deer?
I've got two things mainly. One thing is Well, I've actually got three things, but one thing is primarily my private land, and two things are primarily what I'm going to use on public land. The first thing, as far as private, is I'm implementing a couple mini food plots. So I've identified a few areas that I think are decent travel routes, And if you've been watching on YouTube, you know that there's this one spot where I spent like an hour and a half and got drenched in sweat back in like early August, clearing out this spot, clearing shooting lanes, clearing the ground, and figuring out or building basically a spot where I can put a bunch of throw and grow, pour out corn, whatever else, and build like a micro food plot and kind of try to turn that into a deer sanctuary where they can also have plenty of food to feed right there.
Yeah. I did that last year in a couple spots in my club. You helped me do them. And what I gathered from it, I didn't get any pictures of, you know, good bucks on it. But what I gathered from the camera staying there for the majority part of the year is deer were a lot calmer when they were there. They spent more time with their head down looking at their eating than they did that cautious normal walk they do in food plots, to where they're picking their head off, picking their head up at every single little thing. I mean, if a bird twerps 300 yards away, they're picking their head up when they're in the middle of a food plot.
Most of the time, yeah.
But these deer seem to be a little bit more quiet. And I hunted it a few times. I just never killed anything off of it, mainly because I was buck hunting. I did have a picture of one good buck that would come through there every great now and then. And this was after I killed the 6-point and after I killed Mohican. So I just hunted it, and I was just hoping that the off chance that buck would come through, because I didn't have any idea where else he was. I couldn't find him anywhere else. So I used that to hopefully think, and I had a multiple deer walk right up underneath me, spend a few minutes grazing in that little throw and grow plot before they moved on.
But one of the things that I'm doing a little bit different than what you were doing is I'm making it, for one, bigger. And what I kind of want the deer to do is I've already got plenty of corn out there. I'm getting them used to the area, used to feeding there. And then I'm going to put, you know, corn is like candy to us. Corn to deer is like candy to us. There's not really any nutritional value. So I want, like, especially when the temperatures start dropping, I want there to be something there for those deer to eat that actually helps them out instead of just forces them to have a sweet tooth, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, corn works great, and as long as they're not sitting there eating corn all day, it's fine, because they will go eat to get the nutrients they need. But corn, if they eat too much of it, can get them sick.
Yeah, and they can starve off of a full belly of corn.
Yeah, I mean, which most deer won't do that, just because they'll eat it and then they'll eat more. They'll eat something else.
But grass, acorns, whatever else.
There's not many of these around, but if you have I guess you can talk about spikes or stuff like that. Some deer that are, you know, a couple crayons short of a box, or just young and just amateur and haven't learned yet, that I sit there and eat it all day long. That's the reason I think it's important to use a feeder and lower the amount of corn that actually gets thrown out, so they can't eat enough to do that. You just put enough out, they go and eat it a little bit and then leave.
Yeah.
Because it'll eventually be gone. They can't eat enough to get sick off of.
Yeah.
But what else?
Another thing that I'm gonna be doing is I ordered something that Cade is not very thrilled about for some reason. I think it's just because he's jealous. But I ordered me a tree saddle, and I'm pretty excited about that because it's basically like walking in with no weight of a stand. The climbing system I'm gonna use is like a total of like 5 or 6 pounds, and I can still get, you know, at least 18 feet up a tree if I need to. And I'm pretty excited about that, just simply because it'll be less strain on my back and on my shoulders, as opposed to carrying a climber, you know, it'll be less strain on me to walk way back in these deep public spots that I hunt fairly often. And I'm also going to be doing a little bit of kayak access hunting as well, which I can't really... It'd be tough. I could do it, but it'd be tough to put a climber on a kayak and get back to some of these spots.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm against saddle hunting. I'm just very skeptical. I know there's a lot of people that love it, but I really love my Summit climber. You know, we're not sponsored or anything by Summit by any means. I just really like hunting out of it. I've spent the past 4 years with that climber setting it up the way I want it. You know, I know how to hunt out of it. Yeah, it is a little, my Goliath is a little bit heavy, but by the time I get there and get set up and stuff like that, I mean, it's just, I don't like change in that sense. I like to know what I'm doing.
There's nothing wrong with that. Another thing is Zach,
so the show's, or I mean, our brand is 25 feet high outdoors. But see, I think that's more of an average about how high we get, because Zach tends to be that guy that climbs 10 to, sometimes he'll get up toward 20, but no, usually not.
I mean, when I'm in my climber, my average, I climb up high enough. Like, if in one spot there's a bunch of undergrowth and I got 8 feet off the ground and had plenty of cover, and, you know, that's perfectly fine with me, but there's a couple spots where I will climb past my pull-up rope, you know, but that's pretty rare for me.
And that also has something to do with the different types of, you know, land that we hunt, even though we're so close to each other. If you're going to find cover at my club at 12 feet is very rare, 12 to 20 feet. So a lot of the times, instead of having cover, I have to get high. Like last year when I killed Mohegan, I was 38 feet high in that tree. I also hunted a few times where I climbed like 45 feet, and I have like a 35 foot pull up rope, and I was pulling my bow up by climbing with it hanging down there. So
I ain't about that life.
I have to get high for a vast majority of situations where I hunt. So with a saddle, the only benefit I see about it, I mean, it may be more comfortable. It may be easier to move, and it may be lighter, but I can't get that high in a saddle.
But here's another thing about the saddle is you're behind the tree, so you can use your tree as your cover.
Yeah, but when you're wider than the tree...
I mean, that could pose a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
You just got to find bigger trees and use long ropes.
Did you not hear me earlier in this podcast? I got like 25-year-old pines that I'm climbing. They're not that big.
I'm sure you can find at least one.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I'm not scared to get... I mean, the highest I've ever climbed, when I rangefinder down to the ground, when your rangefinder picks up a full 13 yards, you're high.
Yeah, my rangefinder doesn't pick up the ground most of the time that I'm climbed.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was 13 yards? That's 39 feet. And I climbed last year a little bit higher than that, because I climbed a pine tree in the middle of a food plot. I climbed like 45 feet.
Yeah, you can have that.
It's pretty cool, though. You can see a long ways when you do that. I freaking like it. When you decide you're going to climb something like that, maybe not ideal for bow hunting, but like if you were to rifle hunt and climb that far, take you a pair of good binoculars, dude.
Strap a spotting scope to that to your gun rest.
Yeah, that potential is unreal, dude. You can see, in my club, you could see a long way. Now, whether or not you just so happen to catch that deer that far away and see it, I mean, that's just depending on how much you pay attention, but you can see a long way. I saw one doe that day that I climbed that high, and I saw it about 300 yards away from me, crossing a road, walking toward me.
That's a good ways out there for being in the woods.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was kind of up a hill. So, pretty much when I was looking and seeing that far, it was pretty much eye level.
Yeah,
the way I could see. So, it was really cool. But I wouldn't recommend getting that high. It's just, I really didn't realize I got that high. I was climbing, and it was morning. It was dark when I was climbing, and I just kept climbing until I was getting to a smaller part of that pine tree. Yeah, it was a bigger pine tree, and it didn't get small until a long way up there.
Calm down, girl. That was Lucille.
Yeah.
But another reason I wanted the saddle is, and it leads back into, like, not very climbing very high at all. There's some public land that I actually scouted a little bit today and hung a camera on, and what it basically is the floodplain of a river in Florida is all public land. And if you know anything about the river swamps in Northwest Florida, that stuff is thick. And yeah, it's not just that it's thick, it's that a lot of what's weird about it is, compared to like my club, like in my lease, if you're on the ground, you're lucky. If you're in those thick woods, you're lucky to see 10 yards. Out there, if you're on the ground, you can see 40, 50 yards. In some areas, you can see longer than that. But because of the way the river rises and flushes out all that undergrowth and levels the ground and deposits sand and whatnot, you can, when you're on ground level, you know, you can see a ways. But when you get up in the tree, if you were to climb a tree, you can barely see the ground below you. Like, you just can't see anything from up in a tree. So it's really tough to find spots you can hunt when you're not sitting on the ground. Which, when I hunted it a few years ago and hunted it fairly often, all I was doing was walking and trying to be quiet.
Yeah, and just ran and climbing.
Well, no, I wouldn't climb hardly. I climbed a couple of times, and I brought my climber, but most of the time that I was out there, I ended up just still hunting, and I never did any good, but it was fun. Because the thing about that is, I mean, like I said, if you get 10 feet up a tree, 10 feet, you can barely see a thing on the ground, unless you find one of those few spots where it's actually fairly open above where the water typically is when it floods.
Yeah, and I may be open to attempting a saddle one day, but I think that would be more of a setup that I would take out of state.
Definitely.
Not something I would hunt with locally. If I branched out and started hunting more parts of the Kanaka National Forest, I would maybe do that. But I think that would be I think that would be a better setup to, like, if we, like, we're going to Missouri. I think that would be a better setup for there, because it'll be lighter, so you could instantly walk further.
Which, another thing about, like, walking further is, a lot of the times when I'm going to a new area of public land, there's a good bit of the time, a good percentage of the time, that I've never been to that spot. So what I'm doing when I'm going in, if I'm going to a spot like that, I like to go in early in the day and hunt in the afternoon. But I'll leave my truck at like 12:30, 1 o'clock, and walk in and just meander around. Maybe I'll do a little cyber scouting, where I think is what the proper term would be, where I look on Google Earth for a couple days and try to figure out what's all out there. And that doesn't tell you everything at all. That gives you a little bit of information, but it's nothing like the information when you got boots on the ground.
Yeah, like, I remember when we went to the Cahaba and hunted for that weekend, we hunted not too far from the coal mines. I mean, we'll tell you this. I mean, we don't. I don't really foresee us going back anytime soon.
I don't really foresee hunting next to the coal mines really being a valuable thing.
Yeah, either. I don't think it is. But that was one of those things that we got out there and didn't really have anywhere else to hunt. Needed to climb a tree, so we went to our easiest access point and went and climbed.
Yeah.
But I walked like a mile and a half and what felt like uphill both ways.
Probably because you had that climber on you.
When I carry my climber and all my camera gear and my bow and all my hunting gear, it ends up weighing like 54 pounds.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're gonna be crazy enough to do what we try to do with, you got to be tough, I guess. I don't know. That's a lot of walking with that type of weight on your back. Now, definitely. I know that people, and it would be a lot easier to carry that weight if it, like, that was not a lot of weight. But with if you had that weight in, like, a backpack or, you know, like a hunting pack, it would be easy, like, relatively easy. But being a climber is more oddly shaped, it's longer, you're beating your heels off of the bottom of it when you're walking sometimes, you know, if you're walking downhill or stuff like that. So 54 pounds with a climber feels like 80 or 90 in a pack.
Unless you do what I did. Now, this is a hot tip, a really hot tip in my opinion.
And it's actually a tip I'm thinking about doing.
So what I did on my climber, I was doing some research on how to make a climber easier to pack. And on the climber that I'm currently using, I went online and found a Molly frame, military backpack frame, and all the, like, the waist strap and the shoulder straps and everything. And I basically just paracorded that frame and those straps onto my climber. And that just, it's like carrying a professional, like, high quality pack with a frame and everything. It really sets the weight right on your back how you're supposed to carry weight on your back, and it feels like it takes a lot of the weight off, and it's just a lot more comfortable to pack in.
It's all about leverage.
Exactly.
And I'm actually thinking about getting one of those, or if he gets a saddle, stealing the one off of his.
I'll sell it to you.
Oh yeah. I bet you would. But so if you kind of, I don't know if you had that Molly pack on your climber when we did that video.
I did not. I got it. Or wait, what video?
We did our summit climber.
Yes,
setup.
I did.
Did you? Okay, so we have a video we posted it at the end of last season. It just never got a bunch of views. But if you want to kind of see how our climbers are set up, what we did to them, there is a video of that on our YouTube channel. We did it after hunting season, so no one was looking at climbers after hunting season went out. So we may end up changing, doing another video more showing what our setups and stuff are for this year, but that's to be determined.
But yeah, putting a backpack frame and all the proper straps on there, like when we went to Cahaba, I had the elastic Summit straps, and I was using a Summit Viper, I think it's called SD. It's the Classic is what it is. And that Classic weighs like 45 pounds because it's made out of steel. Maybe 60 pounds. I don't know. It's insanely heavy.
It ain't that heavy.
It's like 30 pounds.
It may be like 25 or 28.
I'm pretty sure it's almost 30.
I mean, by the time you add all your stuff onto it, yeah. But
either way, I had those elastic straps, and they're just digging into my shoulders, and it was the most uncomfortable pack in. Like the climber was hanging down below my butt. It was just awful, and I had to like walk in, like lean halfway forward, and after that, I was like, something needs to change. So I ordered the Molly stuff, and it was a game changer. Like even hauling in that 30-pound climber, it felt like it was 10 pounds lighter.
Yeah, I like the elastic Summit straps pretty good. I didn't like the, like, they're there's straps that aren't elastic. That's just a strap. It's terrible. Like,
I don't understand how you can use the elastic and stuff.
I don't understand how anybody would ever use the normal straps. That's not elastic at all. Like, I mean, that just digs into your shoulder. At least the elasticity of it takes a little bit of weight off of you as you're walking. It like kind of bounces up and down slightly, so it's a lot better in my opinion than a typical strap. Now the backpack strap on the Molly set that he's got, it probably the way it's built, whether or not it should take weight off of your shoulders pretty much, because you also have the front strap that goes around your waist.
Yeah, and what a lot of, like, the way you set it up, I learned this off of Hushin, off of their videos, when they were talking about how to properly set up a pack for your shoulders. It's kind of hard to explain, but you basically want the weight of... You want the weight to push against the front of your shoulders, like the top of your chest, really. And you want it to pull from there, pull against that, and then push into your lower back. And what that allows is it keeps your back straight. You kind of also want it to have, be almost floating on the back side of your shoulders, like on the top of your shoulder blades. You want it to almost be floating and like have very, very little pressure there. And what that's going to do is pretty much going to force you to have almost, I wouldn't say perfect, but really good posture. And that's just a proper way to, I guess, to have a pack set up. And I did that to my climber. And it just takes like all the weight off of your actual shoulders. You know, it makes your back feel not like like it's crumbling. It just makes it feel a lot better.
Yeah. We started this podcast with the plans of talking about early season scouting.
Thinking the exact same thing.
But it don't matter. To me, that's very valuable information. Learn from our mistakes and learn from what we've done. You know, if you're new to hunting, then maybe we can help you get started off on a better foot than we got started off with. Because I didn't start climbing. I didn't truly start climbing until I was about 16 years old. And I've learned a lot because when I first learned how to climb, that's literally all I did. And that's pretty much all I still do, unless it's raining or it just so happens that I have a tree stand set up somewhere that I can go to. But if I'm hunting, 9 out of 10 times, I'm going to be climbing. So I've learned a lot about how to make a setup easier and stuff like that. So,
well, going off of that, off of the tree stand subject and back to kind of early season strategies, what we plan to talk about, another strategy that I'm going to implement this year is hunting near ag, near big fields, cotton fields, peanut fields, whatever. Off of that onto public. I've found a few spots on the Kinnekin National, and I don't want to get too specific, but I don't know how pressured these spots are going to be during season, but if you ever drive around where there's ag fields, it doesn't matter what time of day, you're probably going to eventually see a deer if you drive around long enough, eating cotton, eating peanuts, whatever. I mean, there's just deer there. And so I was thinking,
deer love agriculture. I mean,
they love it.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, if there's deer, which I'm almost guaranteed that there are deer using those ag fields as a primary food source in early season, then I want to try to figure out how those deer are accessing those ag fields and try to intercept them. And
on their way to and from the fields.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that's going to make that difficult is how much pressure they actually get off of those fields.
Well, as far as the fields, like a couple of the fields that I've looked at. There's a couple of them where there's a lot of private woods around there, and I'd imagine that some of those private woods get hunted by the landowners, and some of them are really close to highways. But there's a couple of spots where the only woods near those fields are public land, and it takes a while to walk all the way to the fields from public access.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like that's going to be a key. But another thing to think about is cotton's usually picked and sprayed and bush hogged right around the time bow season opens.
Your ideal situation is peanuts.
Yeah, but I haven't found any peanuts yet.
If they planted any out there, I don't know.
But either way, finding ag fields should be, if I'm thinking, if out there in the middle of nowhere is the same way as it is everywhere else, which I'd imagine it would be, those ag fields are going to hold deer all throughout summer. Therefore, there's going to be deer there. Now, whether or not, if the cotton's already picked and sprayed and there's no deer out there eating the cotton when I'm hunting, then there still should be deer there, whether there's acorns and whether there's whatever else deer want to eat in that area, there should be plenty of deer there.
Pretty much, besides the main food source of what's planted, even after the fact, that fresh growth that comes back up in those fields is a big attracting point for deer, because they like fresh growth. Whatever gets harvested from there, whether it be cotton, peanuts, or whatever, they're going to come into those fields a few weeks after as the grass or if the farmer itself plants it with hay.
Exactly.
Or something like that. So,
which that's another thing I noticed on those fields is during turkey season, if you remember those fields that we looked at every now and then, that was all hay.
Yeah.
During turkey season. So that means it was planted sometime during the winter.
Yeah. So they'll come in there getting that filler crop. I guess that would be the proper term, filler crop.
That's what we're going to say.
That's what we're going to call it. Because neither of us are farmers or have had ever any really experience farming. So that's, you're looking for fresh growth in that situation.
Yeah, and I mean, if it's cotton and it's fertilized and well-managed, even if it's not fresh growth, like even if they are about to spray it, about to pick it, they're still going to be deer eating it. They just love it.
Yeah.
And I've noticed they bed in the middle of cotton fields every now and then.
Yeah. I think you've had some experience there too.
I have.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about it. That's for another podcast.
Yeah, but that one wasn't your fault. That was just bad timing.
Yeah.
But, so the main points that for early season and preseason scouting, early season hunting, is you have to find your food source. Whether that is a food source you provide with being corn or some other type of supplement on a private lease, or you go, or even finding acorns or oak trees and stuff like that are producing. So your main goal for early season scouting is to find food sources, because you're pretty much wasting your time if you're hunting over water holes or water sources.
They get most of the deer get their water from
the plants
and like, dew on the plants.
I think it's somewhere around 80% of their water intake is through dew and the dew off the plants and plants. It's 70 to 80%, something like that.
I read it in an article. I'm pretty sure I've read the same thing.
So you're wasting your time if you look over water. I mean, you might get lucky. I mean, and you might find a creek that has a bunch of travel routes through it, like a little branch that has a travel route.
That's one thing you can probably find if you're hunting near water. one thing you can do is find where those deer are crossing the water, and that'd probably be a hot spot. Cause if they're crossing the water, if you can just notice a heavy used trail in one spot, there's a reason they're crossing right there. Whether it's just easy to cross right there or not, or whatever it is, I don't know why. I don't know what the reason would be, but if there's a reason for those deer to cross in one spot, then they're going to keep crossing in that one spot, and that'd be a hot spot to hunt.
Yeah, like anytime you find a creek, that's, you can literally see the activity walking through it with tracks and stuff, usually because the ground's a lot softer too.
Yeah.
So it makes it easier to notice that. But, and typically where there is water, there is going to be some oak trees not too far off of it.
Yeah.
I mean, around here, what my experience in seeing, typically you're going to have oaks near water. So they deer might, when they walk through it, might just so happen to stick their head down and get a few drinks of water, but that's not why they're going there. They're not going there for the water. They're going for whatever's on the other side of that water.
Exactly.
But is there anything else that you think you want to add to this? I know we got a few more podcasts coming up that we're going to, you know, go even further in this detail of doing this and talking about this, but
I think I just kind of want to really quickly talk about the difference between preseason and in-season scouting. Like, as far as preseason scouting, what my mindset is you're not looking necessarily, or the primary goal is not necessarily where the deer are right now as far as, like, what they're doing in August, because the season doesn't open up till October. There's a lot of change between now and then. Where they are right now is going to, I mean, there's going to be a reason for that, and they're going to stick around that main area.
That should be the general area that they are going to maintain staying until either the rut or they get busted out of there.
Yeah, so you want to know where the deer are now, but I know you need to keep in mind what you're looking for is where they're going to be in October, because oak trees aren't dropping acorns right now, so there's not going to be deer under every oak tree right now.
Yeah.
But if you can find fresh deer sign near oak trees right now, then you know that those oak trees are going to, if they're dropping good, they're going to get hit hard during, you know, early bow season.
And if you're on private land, one thing you can do is if you kind of wanted to, I don't know if this will work, but it's just an idea that I have. If you're hunting through oaks right now, obviously oaks aren't dropping. So if you would go ahead and if you started feeding that area, get them a little bit more accustomed to already staying there and eating a little bit, maybe that'll make it a quicker turn around from them finding the oaks whenever they start dropping.
Well, I feel like they know.
Yeah, I feel like they know too.
As soon as that first acorn drops, there's going to be a deer or a squirrel or something right on top of it.
They can hear it from like 800 yards away with the wind blowing.
Probably so.
Yeah, that's what I figured. But you never know. It's not going to hurt anything to feed some of those areas if you're on public. I mean, on private land.
Yeah, don't feed on public.
Yeah, don't feed on public.
But as far as like in-season scouting, I kind of touched on it, but it's very helpful, like, especially if you're a public land hunter, maybe one of your spots got blown out or you killed a deer on one spot so you don't want to go back to that area, whatever it is. If you're finding a new spot on Google Maps or you drove around and you're like, hey, that spot looks good, what I would suggest is, and I've done this plenty of times, is grabbing your stand, grabbing all your stuff, walk in there and try to keep as low of a profile as possible. Keep the wind in your face. You know, be smart about it. But walk around until you find fresh deer sign and identify what type of sign it is, whether it's a trail that deer are very regularly using. Try to figure out what that trail is coming to and going from. try to find feed, you know, whatever it is, and hunt that spot. And that's a very effective tactic.
All right, so remember, you, as far as early season, or early preseason and early season scouting, you can scout right now all you want, and you need to spend as much time scouting now as you can, because you have a limited amount of days to hunt. You want to be hunting during the time, that time. You want to be actually attempting to kill those deer during early season, when the pressure is at its lowest amount. Because as soon as the rifles, or as soon as bow season comes in, you got this little, like a speedometer that's slightly going up every day about how much pressure they're feeling and how much more they're going to shut down and go nocturnal. But I think that's going to wrap us up for today, guys. I really appreciate y'all sticking through this entire thing. If you hadn't already, check out our YouTube channel, 25 Feet High Outdoors. We also have personal channels, Zach G for Zach's, and mine's under my name, Cade White. And you can like, I do a bunch of archery videos on there, like 80-pound bow versus videos. It's pretty fun. But remember to get out there, get scouting now. You're not going to have a successful season, at least if you have my luck, if you don't do any scouting. You got to get out there and put in the work. Go out there and just enjoy God's creation. We really appreciate y'all watching. And always, always remember to live 25 high.